Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story, we break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked with Keith Faniff yesterday about some state stuff from CT Mayor Lisa Hagan, who I believe is the only Connecticut-based journalist full-time in D.C. I mean, she's D.C.-based, but she's the only full-time from a Connecticut publication. I get that right. Isn't that right?
Yep, you're right. That's in fact correct.
How'd your day go yesterday? What'd you do?
It was a long day of a lot of standing and waiting. I was not able to get into the rotunda because it was pretty limited for guests and press. And so I was actually in Emancipation Hall, which was the overflow. But we got to hear President Trump speak. He came and he actually spoke a few minutes longer than his inaugural address. So, day well spent.
So that second speech has made some news because it was a little even more off the cuff and a little harsher, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have teleprompters. It felt very much like a campaign-style rally, like some of the speeches he did at Capital One, very different. He told the whole crowd that, again, in a very kind of, you know, rambling, kind of unwielding, kind of freewheeling kind of way, that, you know, he wanted to say some of those things in his inaugural address, but they, you know, either his team or Melania told him to keep it out. And so he basically was like, hey, this crowd can handle it. And so he basically said all the things that he apparently wanted to say in the inaugural address, but didn't.
We're talking with Lisa Hagan from ctmayor.org. I mean, obviously, from the Connecticut perspective, there's the all-Democrat delegation, but there's also, you know, a Republican Party here in Connecticut, which is, you know, does really well on the municipal level, obviously doesn't have the numbers at the state level, but has some really talented people. But there's a couple hundred thousand Republican voters here in the state of Connecticut, and you've written about both sort of the voter and the delegation. I don't know which one to take first, but like, how is the congressional delegation going to manage being in the minority in a Trump White House?
Yeah, well, with the delegation, you know, the seven of them, they've all been through this before. They all served, maybe not the full Trump term, but they overlapped with him for at least anywhere from 2 to 4 years. So they've all worked under a Trump administration. Many of them have been in Congress before when there's been what we call the Republican trifecta, or basically a trifecta where you control the Senate, the House, and the White House. And so they've been in this before where they've been in the minority party. So, you know, it's a lot of what I've heard before, I think, how they navigated the Trump term the first time, which is, you know, you're picking your battles on the big things that they care about, that they see as harmful, and they're going to work with him when they can. I mean, a lot of them in delegation feel actually pretty good about what he did on trade the first time around. A lot of them don't like the tariffs that he's proposing. So, you know, I think that could be a potential upcoming fight. But, you know, I think it'll be a balancing act for the congressional delegation.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking earlier with lobbyists, Republican lobbyists, and you know, what we're seeing is, you know, maybe Congress is getting, I mean, the check and balance here. I mean, with all this executive power that seems to be displayed, I think it's almost like the president saying, I'm going to do this my way, and if you're going to have to challenge me in court if you want to change it. I don't know. Congress seems to be, outside of spending stuff, a little compromised almost.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the whole point of, you know, doing an executive action, is that you're going to circumvent Congress because you want to get this thing done, and you potentially, you know, you don't have the votes. And yes, Republicans control the House, they control the Senate. It's still narrow majority. So a lot of the legislation you work on, you're going to need Democratic votes to get anything passed. So this, again, basically circumvents going through Congress. And, you know, and we've seen my colleague and, you know, Mark Pazniokas in Connecticut Mirror write about this, but you're going to see, you know, the Connecticut Attorney General kind of waging battle on a lot of this stuff. So you might see a lot of action actually emanating from Connecticut in pushing back against the Trump administration, even more so than the delegation who's based in D.C.
Yeah. We're talking with Lisa Hagan from CT Mirror. And again, you go to ctmirror.org and you can find all of her material from D.C. The Republicans that you ran into from Connecticut down there, they must have been pretty elated, a little vindicated maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they were all really excited because they had gotten tickets to actually be seated and watch what they thought was going to be the outdoor ceremony. And so I imagine there was a decent amount of disappointment and just some people who frankly didn't come because of the weather. But, you know, they got to do a lot of events this weekend. There was a ton of balls. There's just a lot of pomp and circumstance that happens around an inauguration before and after. So they all seemed quite excited. And, you know, again, I imagine a little disappointment not being able to witness it in person like in past years.
As a journalist, how do you approach this? I mean, I just made a list of like stuff this morning, you know, like from pardons to TikTok to the drug cartels to regulation freeze to hiring freeze to return to work to Paris Climate Agreement to World Health Organization. I mean, it's a lot of stuff. How do you try to look through a Connecticut lens, or do you try to figure out what's like, how are you approaching? Because you're the one person covering all this stuff for your organization. How do you do that?
That's a great question. It's tough. I mean, even just aside from all this, just, you know, deciding when I choose to write about something, that's a tough decision all the time. And so, yes, I mean, that's always my number one priority, is thinking about it through a Connecticut lens. And I think, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, either whether it's related to any executive action that President Trump does or any bills that were going through Congress prior to this, I mean, there's just a lot of symbolism that happens around these things that are either just, they're not going to amount to anything. They're not going to get through Congress. They're going to get held up in courts for a while. And so I think picking out the things that I feel like will actually happen and that will actually impact, you know, either Connecticut residents or just Americans in general. So I think it's prioritizing those things, because just some things just frankly are not going to shake out just because, again, they're legally dubious. They're not going to pass Congress. So that's how I kind of go at this.
I can't ask your opinion because you're a good journalist and probably wouldn't give it if I did. But the pardon stuff got me off my balance, whether on both sides, the Biden family pardons and the Jan 6 pardons. I guess the question I could get an answer from you, and I'm more than happy to get your opinion if you have one, but is, what was the collective response to those two pieces of news?
I think there was frustration from both parties on both sides related to Trump and Biden pardons. I mean, you know, I was in Emancipation Hall waiting for the inauguration to start. And I mean, you know, we saw Biden enter the rotunda, and, you know, minutes before that, the news had broken that he had done more pardons for his family. And so, you know, you're seeing, you know, obviously Republicans are frustrated by it, but you saw some Democrats too worry about, you know, whether pardons are being overused, and, you know, does that give more leverage to Trump to be able to use it, and then vice versa. Obviously, you know, we were all inside the Capitol yesterday. Typically, we're not inside, we're outside the Capitol for inauguration. And, you know, a lot of the rooms that were used were places where January 6th rioters came in to try to disrupt the certification of the election. And so I think there was a lot of, you know, interesting symbolism in that. And, you know, again, a lot of frustration, obviously, particularly from Democrats about pardoning and commuting sentences for January 6th rioters.
Yeah. Lisa, great stuff. Thanks for the time. I know it's been a busy 24 hours for you. We always appreciate it.
Thanks. Appreciate it.